Bij Burger King gebeuren spannende dingen. Wat dacht je van een classic cheeseburger, chicken nugget burger of sundae voor maar 1 euro per stuk? En dat is nog niet alles. Alle King deals zijn maar 1 euro. Haal ze nu alleen bij Burger King.
Right, hello everybody, and welcome to our latest Royal Blue podcast in association with Sport Pacer. We've got our top team in today because there's an awful lot to talk about. Phil Kirkbride, Tony Scott, Gavin Buckland, and myself, Dave Prentice. And there's only one place to start, really, and that was the utter lunacy and mayhem that we witnessed at Goodison on a Sunday tea time. It was a game, for me, almost as intense, as emotionally draining as some of those, you know, sort of Coventry and Wimbledon occasions. It was just absolute madness. Did we get lucky, Phil? Was it, you know, a very important result in the end? But, you know, we're all thrilled that, you know, so Unzi got the home win that we needed. But it doesn't really paper over the cracks, does it?
No, certainly Lady Luck was on our side, wasn't it? Because, you know, barring an encouraging sort of first 10 minutes or so where the team played with a decent amount of energy, you know, for the first hour of the game, Everton were the Everton we've watched for the past 6-8 weeks, you know, more or less since the start of the season. You know, plenty of bluster, commitment and energy, but nothing at either end to deter the opposition in any way. So yes, in many ways they did get lucky, but that was certainly the only way that they could respond, because unfortunately nothing changes despite the victory. You know, Everton's still lacking quality at both ends of the pitch, and so it was going to be a victory that had to be based on the sort of the fundamentals of any team, yeah. Heart, fight, character, because they don't have the required skills to sort of get back into games and win games in any other way at the minute. And of course we did get lucky with the penalty at the end, and Tom Cleverley, you know, watched it back a few times in here today already. Baffling the way he squared himself up, and you just sensed as soon as he was approaching that penalty, it wasn't going to go in. But it was one of those days, and I think the hope now is for whoever comes in and takes over, or whether that's Unzi for a little bit longer, that at the very least it gives the team a little bit of confidence and makes them believe a little bit more, because as I say, the issues are still there and they won't be resolved until January.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about the managerial situation, because, you know, another name is being tossed into the frame today, Diego Simeone, which, you know, people laugh. It's a very ambitious suggestion. Yeah. From what we're hearing, it's not as fanciful as it may seem. You know, he would be interested in talking to Everton Football Club, but only at the end of the season, because he's insistent on fulfilling his contract until then. But he's interested in hearing what the Everton project is all about, which, you know, is quite reassuring. But that still means there's a short-term appointment required until the summer before Everton can talk to anybody else. Do they go short-term? Do they go David Unsworth? Do they go Sam Allardyce? Do they look for a long-term appointment now, i.e. Marco Silva, Thomas Tuchel, Sean Dyche, the names that have been linked? I mean, what do you think, Gav? Do you think it should be the short term? Are we in such dire straits that we need to worry about a manager who's going to save us and keep us in the Premier League until we can be a bit more ambitious in the summer?
Given Phil's comments there, I would agree with what Phil said there about the current state of play with the team, and on that basis you've got to look short term. It's just thinking about Unzi having one on Sunday, does that give him a couple more games perhaps? It was interesting the other week when you said that in terms of appointing him, we sort of got it the wrong way around. That, like, he should have started with the home game. So if that had been his first game in charge on Sunday, he said, well, actually, we've got something going here. Like, maybe we need to keep it going. And I was just thinking that appointing him for four games, is that enough to pass an opinion? Does he deserve maybe another couple of games in charge?
The changes he made at the weekend all paid off. You could argue that he got the team selection wrong in the first place. I don't know. But the problem he's got, and any manager's got, is the squad is so imbalanced, it's so lopsided, it's so lacking in any kind of attacking, you know, sort of intent. So I think you can bring in Jose Mourinho between now and January, and I think he'd struggle to get goals out of that side.
No, but I think just to sum up, I think we need to bring them short term, but don't necessarily think it's something that needs to be done in the next fortnight, perhaps giving Unsworth a couple of games. I haven't won to say, well, like, show us out, you know.
I was just going to say, I actually don't fully agree with that, because my concern is how long do we keep. Because as chuffed as we are for Unzi that it came off on Sunday, and he deserved that victory for everything he's put into this caretaker spell, unfortunately we could go and lose those next two matches, and they're big games. Now, at what point do we say, oh God, we should have got the new man in two games ago and given him a bit longer?
I get that.
Well, so we're guessing then that, do you think they've thought this through when they've sacked Koeman? That, listen, they haven't got anyone lined up then, have they? When they've sacked him, they've just hit the panic button, sacked him, and then we'll think about it. Because obviously, you've seen what's happened elsewhere. Bilic was sacked, Moyes was in within a day. Yeah. Now, obviously, were we 2 weeks down the line here? Well, 3 or 4 weeks now since Unsworth had the games.
Yeah.
And there's no one in the door. So I look at it now and thinking, these haven't thought this through here.
Oh, but the fact is give Unsworth four games, they've got the fortnight of international to make an appointment, could be the strategy. Yeah. So we give Unsworth an opportunity to show if he's perhaps an option for this season, or if that's not the case, we then bought ourselves another fortnight to get a manager in.
Yeah, it's both, isn't it?
But what has it done then?
Well, it might have confirmed in Fahad Mashiri's eyes that Unzi is not the man, and at the same time, you know, don't for 1 minute think the club have just been sat there waiting, you know, not doing anything while Unzi's been in charge. Of course, they've been sounding out with the managers and drawing up the shortlist. So I think there was a will, wasn't there, that they wanted to give Unzi that opportunity to prove them wrong or prove them right, however you looked at it. And maybe these four games have made up their minds. And maybe now they're going to go, well, we've got another, whatever, 12 days or whatever.
My fear about a short-term appointment is, again, what that then does to the squad, because it's a manager working with somebody else's players again in the summer. I mean, you know, Unzi clearly doesn't fancy a number of the players that were brought in the summer, or his argument would be he doesn't know them, he's not familiar with them. He is familiar with John Joe Kenny, with Benny Benningham, players like that, which is why he's using them. Equally, if a manager comes in now and he will buy players in January because players are desperately required, certainly strikers, are they players that the new, you know, sexy continental manager we appoint in the summer is going to want as well?
Yeah.
And, you know, we start from scratch, you know, almost like twice.
My counter to that is, and I think the feeling certainly for Mashiri is, look, I mean, we all are probably around this table and everybody's convinced we'd get out of it anyway. But I think there's a concern from the very top that they can't even flirt with danger. There can't be a situation where we're in March and we're not way out of the mess or anything like that. So I think January is a one-off.
Yeah.
I think you bring players in for the final 6 months of the season and that's it. And if they're no longer required for the new manager, well, so be it. But it's a price you pay to make certain that there's no silliness, no nonsense at the wrong end of the table.
Would it not damage the football club then, Phil, if Sam Allardyce was appointed from now till the end of the season and say we finish just below mid-table?
How's that damaging if you brought him in to make sure you don't go down? Because that's why he's being brought to the
style of football.
Well, that's irrelevant, isn't it?
Because
if you're bringing Sam Allardyce to the football club, and I'm not saying that they should or should not, but if you're bringing him into the football club, you're bringing him for one reason.
Of course.
So, by hook or by crook, he's there to keep you
up. Are circumstances that bad, though?
I don't think they are. 8 points behind Liverpool and Arsenal.
Four
behind Brighton and eight.
Having played the fixtures that we've played, I mean, that was a brutal, you know, fixture list at the start of the season. Already the trips to Old Trafford, to the Etihad, to Stamford Bridge have gone. Yeah. You know, so as has, you know, the Tottenham visits. You know, the fixture list does look kind of...
Having said that, it goes back to what Phil was saying about the performance on Sunday. We're 15th, but we, you know, the teams at the bottom. I mean, as everybody said, we watched Crystal Palace on Sunday. They're a much better team in that performance than what we are, and they're bottom. So although you can quote gaps, and there's a degree of truth in that, in terms of, if you have a look at the performances and the playing squads and the fact that we've won two of the three games really, quite fortunately. That's great. We do look like a team.
And actually, what was the last best decent performance you've seen from an Everton team this season?
Not this season.
City away.
And even that was down to a player. That was a player sent off early in the match, which helped our cause significantly.
Believe it or not, we were coming out the ground disappointed with the draw in the end, weren't we?
Yeah. So I think
which is quite worrying, that really, isn't it?
So I think it is. It's all hands on deck.
Because
moment,
you know, you think about the next game, and Palace are the worst team in the Premier League, but haven't won away from home in the league since Palace.
My worry is, if Sam Allardyce takes charge, it's the fans' mentality towards him.
Yeah.
In at Everton, the Evertonians, and outside, the perceptive of what they'll think as Everton now. Oh, that way you're going to be come from now till the end of the season. Not going to be on the telly. The fans aren't going to lose interest. I feel the attendances will go down. That's my argument with Sam Allardyce's appointment at Everton. I can't see that general atmosphere the way it has been in the past.
Oh, look, I'm not definitively pro bringing him in at this stage. But on the flip side, Sam Allardyce comes in, sorts it out, gets a couple of decent players in January. And actually, you know, I don't want to use the comparison because it's not two completely different clubs. But at one stage at Palace, he had them in the top half of the table. Now at Everton, who's to say that he couldn't get us back to close-ish to where we should be, mid-top half of the table? Because, you know, if Everton finished seventh this season, it'd be a minor miracle.
To be honest, he's not entirely, you know, agricultural football. That Bolton team that he had with Jock AF, JJ Okocha, Campo playing, you know, so played some very easy on the eye football.
Would you go and pay to watch them?
That's my point.
But the point is, you wouldn't pay to watch Everton at the moment.
Well, this is it.
You wouldn't, but we're meant to be improving. You're not going to say the same, are you?
Yeah.
They're not going. If Everton are not going to be on the box, they're not going to be talked about. And this is what I'm trying to say. This is meant to be a new era. You're sucking Koeman bringing Allardyce in.
Yeah, but then you could bring in Marco Silva, but then you go, well, actually, he took Hull down. Yes, he got them going, but he still took them down. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, at what point do the football club actually go, you know what, we're going to have to write this season?
Don't forget, he took over in January, Silva.
Yeah.
So when in November, there's a huge difference.
I know, but how long do we wait?
And is Allardyce a guarantee of success?
He's as near as cast iron guarantees you'll get. Now, I appreciate it's one hell of a negative move bringing him into the football club, but that's where they have to go. Right, we have to have a time frame. We have to go. This is the cut-off point. If we're no further up the league and performances haven't improved markedly in whatever time frame, we have to go and get in.
But what do you mean, what do you mean by negative move?
Well, in terms of, you know, as Tony said, look, you're just admitting that you're pleading. It's a cry for help.
Yeah.
And you will go back to basics and that's it. But it's a positive move if you sort it out. You do not skirt with danger and you finish close to where we finished last season.
My worry is that the players he's got to deal with aren't going to change, and Unsworth knows them better than anybody. You know, so he's probably better equipped to actually, you know, deal with that pretty paltry squad than somebody coming in with a fresh pair of eyes.
I totally agree, Pernod, because the Evertonians I spoke to after the match, the majority of them, when I mentioned Allardyce, a few of them said, I've had to keep Unsworth to the end of the season. There's no difference. Can you tell me what Allardyce is going to do that Unsworth can't?
Well, it's an experience for the start, isn't it? It's not so much setting the team out, it's the experience of managing the Premier League.
It's experience of dealing in the transfer market in January
And managing at the bottom, bottom. And I'm with Pleno, because I know he's up from there. But I'm with Pleno, he's a bit more expansive Allardyce than what people give him. Both on and off the pitch as well, isn't he? He's well into
We can't play second ball with only Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
That's what he craves on, get the ball in advance areas, play the second ball.
But I think he's savvy enough to adapt, isn't he, to the players he's got. I don't know any games, I think he's fifth, he's behind Moyes with the most Premier League games as manager, isn't he? So you've got all that experience. And
no one fancy Moyes back now.
If he leaves West Ham before Christmas, maybe. But I just think it makes a lot of sense to just bring him in towards the end of the season. But it'd be interesting to see any insight. Would Sam want that?
Well, the feeling is, look, the cynic in you says he wouldn't, and he'd want a 2-3 year contract. But he would fully know, wouldn't he? He's not daft.
Yeah.
The club would say, right, come in, all right, we'll give you what you want. But if he does the job that you've been brought in to do, Right.
I think he's hoping a short-term appointment could lead to something more enduring if he can make, you know, an absolute revelation of it. If he can suddenly turn around a season from hell and, you know, have Everton finish, you know, seventh again, you know, that you would think that that's given him, you know, enough money in the bank to get a more extended stay at it. And it probably would, to be fair.
Nobody wants to see Sam Allardyce long-term at the football club. But it's come to a point, or it may come to a point, that you say, well, he might be the person they need for the time being.
Do you think a lot of fans will lose interest if he's appointed?
Lose interest if he's still bottom three?
We're not, though, are we, Phil?
But what did you see on Sunday in the performance? I'm not saying the final half an hour where it was blood and guts, or in the performances all season that makes you think that they're definitely going to be nowhere near it.
Fans believe in the ground.
What makes you think that Allardyce is going to transform the way Everton are playing from now till the end of the season and get us half of the league?
Well, his track record.
It's a good point. I just can't see Sam Allardyce managing Everton and getting me off the edge of my seat.
Well,
excited watching Everton.
But he'll make certain, as good as you can get, that the football club won't be in trouble. I know we're only in November, but how long can we say we're only in November? December.
As much as the counter argument is, I get that we could get sucked in and Palace are playing better than us. The counter argument is that we're 4 points off eight.
To be honest, I don't want to make the comparison because, you know, this guy's a club legend and, you know, so I love him. He's one of my mates, Joe Royle. When he came into Everton in November 1994 with an absolute firefighting job on his hands, he played Route 1 football unashamedly. He picked his dogs of war in midfield that scrapped and, you know, sort of intimidated opponents. And he told Andy Hinchcliffe to knock it long to Duncan, you know, so Paul Ryder pick up second balls. And it was successful. He called it, you know, cup football, which is why we ended up winning the FA Cup that year. He told Peter Johnson, you know, throw your money at Everton to win the FA Cup, which he did.
We had three sets of forwards that
game. But Mike Walker wasn't using them, you know, so, you know, it was... You could argue, you know, the same personnel situation doesn't exist at Everton anymore. But I'm just saying that fans will accept, you know, so a certain style of football if it's pragmatic in the short term.
Were we in the bottom three?
Oh, we were absolutely relegated already. 11 points from 14 games. Yeah. It was absolute, you know, it was a relegation waiting to happen. Yeah. Everton had to play European qualification standard football to survive that season. But I'm just saying, you know, the point I was trying to make is that, you know, fans will accept pretty much anything if they're seeing their team win. And I don't think people would lose interest. You know, you don't lose interest in your football club unless you're losing week after week after week. And I'm playing devil's advocate here, so I don't want to see him.
Yeah, will fans accept the transitional season? Because they don't pay that in the season ticket, do they?
No, but that's the ebb and flow and the fortunes and the roller coaster emotions of following your football club. You don't pay your season ticket and there's a guarantee at the bottom saying you won't be rubbish.
I get that, but this is going to be just... get us over the line, but type of job, isn't it? Well, just see us over and that's it, happy days, go home.
Well, this is the whole point, isn't it? The club have to make a decision, is this where we are at? And is that what we unfortunately have to accept?
I just don't think after 11 games we can just write off the season
I think when you say transitional season, you could argue that as soon as Mancini came in and us wanted to go from sort of mid-table mediocrity to sort of getting on the door of the you know, knocking on the door of top six or top four, that entire period is a transition period, is maybe three or four seasons where you're changing the entire culture and staff within the club. And I think the argument would be is for us to manage that three or four seasons, say until the ground's built and all that type of stuff, for us to manage that effectively, at the moment, what we may have to take one step back to take two steps forward. And I think that an appointment of an Allardyce or Allardyce figure between now and the end of the season is to do just that. It's to buy us some time, as I said last week, so when we get to the summer, we can then use that period to make good progress in maybe the next two seasons.
Yeah. And look, let's play fantasy football for a minute. So Allardyce comes in, everybody's not particularly happy with it, but he does his job, consolidates the football team, improves them, tightens them up, and then the club go, thanks very much, Sam, and then they go and get your star name that everybody loves and they build again where that surely is part of what they're thinking.
If you're a player and you know that manager's not going to be here in the summer,
well, there's going to be a clear out anyway, isn't there? By the performances. Yeah.
To be honest, we're getting that now, aren't we? Which, you know, which brings us on to the situation which is being caused. And, you know, so our headlines this week, the Morgan Schneiderlin, Kevin Morales business. Now I'm going to choose my words very, very carefully here because
very carefully, bro.
Well, no, because you know, so Morgan Schneidel himself has been, you know, choosing his words very carefully. He made a statement saying it's untrue to say that he was sent home from training, which is absolutely correct. He wasn't sent home from training, but what is correct is that there was an issue during a training session which Duncan Ferguson was taking, whereby the coaching staff weren't happy with the attitude and with the effort being shown by Schneidel and with Kevin Morales, and suggested that they'd be better served going indoors and, you know, so not bothering with the training session. And both players took them up on that suggestion and walked off the pitch. So, you know, you can argue that's probably worse than being sent home from training.
Yeah.
Kevin Morales has sort of issued a tentative apology today, saying that he wasn't left out of the squad for that reason, but he's apologised to the president, to his teammates and to the fans for his frustrations. He didn't actually say
not
what was causing his frustrations.
Not handling that moment better, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, clearly there are some players that are seeing a caretaker manager in place and just thinking, well, he's not going to be there for very long, you know, therefore, you know, so why should we bother? So we've got that issue already, which is causing problems. It needs players with a certain mindset and a certain attitude and enthusiasm, you know, to get us out of that mess. David Unsworth knows the players that he thinks he can rely on, you know, and he's picking them at the moment, which is why those two players weren't, well, Kevin Lass says otherwise, but, you know, so yeah. I think that's why those two players weren't involved at the weekend. And if Unsworth is still in charge for the Palace game, it's open to question whether they'll be involved again. You know, so for...
I think it's a totally dangerous game they're playing, you know. You know, it's particularly in this instance, because I think we discussed this morning, Preno. Yeah, they may not believe that David Unsworth will be here the long term, and there'll be another manager in. But people will still be at the football club. When that new manager comes in, he will use them as sounding boards, like Roberto did after David Moyes, like Ronald did after Roberto. And those messages will get back. And the new manager of the football club, whether it's Allardyce or whoever, will not have gone unnoticed that these two players have done this, and this has caused a problem. So it's totally naive of them to think that it's, you know, new manager will come in, I'll be all right. It's totally wrong. And I hope that the reaction from the supporters and the fact that this has got out into the press really is a rocket.
Yeah.
Because those two players and several others, you know, they aren't the only two that need to pull the socks up. But particularly those two players need to start proving why they're at the football club, if you ask me.
Schneidel in particular, his form has been an absolute bizarre one. He arrived last January, and if he'd have been there for a full season, he would have been the player of the season, despite a centre-forward scoring, you know, so the most number of goals we've seen since probably Gary Lineker. To take that, you know, form on and then just suddenly fall apart this summer, I don't know what's gone wrong.
Is this why Jose Mourinho sold him?
Well,
is this why?
Maybe.
Why we're seeing the real Morgan Schneidel, so to speak.
It's interesting, Christian Walsh, one of our writers, I was just discussing Schneidel with him, and he kind of made an interesting point where he was saying, even though Schneidel, you know, since he's been in England, even though he's been in League One and the Championship, his career and the teams he's played in have always been on the up.
Yeah.
So this is almost like the first test he's had of having to deal with adversity. And, you know, I'm now questioning whether he's got the stomach for the fight. Yeah. Now, ultimately, you come to Everton Football Club and he came to a team and a squad and a project, as everybody keeps saying, that's got aspirations for challenging to Europe. But you will inevitably go through times when it's not going well. So, even particularly in his position and his importance to the team, that is worrying me that we're seeing the drop that we have done.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, like Pano said, and like our players, you and your manager, it's that, you know, it's not even your new manager be all right. It's like that old George Graham line, isn't it? About when you walk into a dressing room as new manager, you always remember that the people in front of you, the one who got your predecessor sacked, you know? Yeah, and, you know, that managers have always got that in the back of their minds whenever they walk into a dressing room. So I think that's something that you've got to remember in all of this. And I can only echo the thought, is he got married in the summer, didn't he, Schneidel? Did I read that?
Yeah.
That's old Harry Katzick thing, wasn't it? He never liked players, he got married.
Content players.
He always said that he dropped off and performed the next season. And without sort of, you know, setting Tony off, you know, if you could, I suppose it's, you know, damning in that if you said who's the one Everton player in the squad you could anticipate being sent home for training for not trying, you'd probably be one person above, you know.
Come on, Tony, that's ours.
And
you've
I think
got
Tony's going to probably say there. And I know what I would say is Morales, I'm not surprised at, and that's not because Schneidel I am, but I haven't seen Schneidel totally unprofessionally get sent off on Thursday, I think. Well, actually, maybe not a big
isn't it?
And it might have been frustration from that, and that sort of partner behaviour fits in with his attitude on Thursday, to be honest with you.
Well, this has been my argument with Kevin Morales for years, and I've been on quite vocal, and I've said it time and time again, for the lad, for the ability that lad has got, and time again, so frustrating that he hasn't shown us it. And when we were with Leon Osborne the other week, and yourself, and we were saying, got to pick him, he's the only one with pace. And I go, David Unsworth seemed that he'd rather play Umar Nias and Benny Maringame instead of Morgan Schneiderlin and Kevin Morales in a crucial game that Everton had to win. Now, that goes to show you what he thinks of their attitude straight away, but nothing surprises me with Kevin Morales, nothing surprises me at all. One player that I wouldn't like to see play for Everton again. I just think his whole attitude, his laziness as well. He thinks he can just drift in and out of games, and he's been doing it for, what, this is now his sixth season. I was looking at, obviously, the game. These are full 90-minute games he's played for Everton. 2012-13 season, 5. That was under David Moyes. 2014 season, 10, under Roberto Martinez. The season later, 3 matches. Season later, 6. So that was Roberto Martinez. Under Ronald Koeman, 3 full 90 minutes under Ronald Koeman. And obviously, Unsworth hasn't played him at all. So that's the equivalent to 27 90-minute matches he's played. Over 200 chances he could have done that. So that says a lot for me, that the attitude in that player is all wrong. And the sooner he's out the club, the better.
Yeah, it's frustrating because, you know, before he came to Everton in Greece, he was playing as a central striker and, you know, sort of top scorer in that league. And that's a position that Everton desperately need filling at the moment. You know, we need a central striker, somebody that can play on the shoulder of defenders, can show a bit of pace, can show a bit of strength, and, you know, clearly you wouldn't trust him to do that at the moment.
Oh, he's been linked with loads of moves since he's been here as well. Not one of them returned.
Well, he signed a new deal in the summer, didn't he? Yeah. And then, you know, claimed that he was frustrated because he wanted to move elsewhere. You know, just a very complex individual.
The most telling thing about his he's signing the new contract in May was he admitted in the quotes that were released, even my family have told me I have to do more. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's the fact.
He doesn't do the dishes,
said.
Does he?
Yeah. I was like, wow, that's great honesty, but there it is in a nutshell.
Even the
people who support you through thick and thin are going, you need to put your finger
out. Maybe you should have got his family down the training ground on Saturday, you know.
I remember when the end of season awards last season, and obviously I think Bill Kenwright came on stage and he says, and there's big news tomorrow, another player signing a big long-term contract at Everton. And everyone thought Ross Barkley on the edge of the seats. He went Kevin Morales, and no one flinched.
And had a little pop at the Echo for, for supporting him.
So, do you know what? And that what winds me up more than anything. It's the ability he's got. If he was just a Dirk Cow type of player, blood and tons, I give us all, I get all that.
I'll tell you what, if he had Umar Nias's heart, I wanted to mention that lad today because, you know, we've damned him many times on this. You know, we'll all hold our hands up. You know, his quality is not good enough for Everton Football Club. I think I described him as a kitten playing with a ping pong ball, which is, you know, seems to sum up his possession. But he's got heart, and that's what Everton needs at the moment, and he never stops running. If, you know, defenders, or if he doesn't know what he's going to do, what chance have defenders got? And the goal just summed him up, you know. It was a decent ball from Luckman, defender caught on his heels, but he made it into something it shouldn't have been. Keeper was a bit impetuous, maybe. Ended up going in off his ankle or something. But who cares? He deserves a longer run.
Last two and a quarter hours, kicking into Gladys, and he scored 5 goals. This is like, you know.
And there is a little bit of quality there because that goal against Sunderland, you know, was an absolute top finish.
And
the first one against Bournemouth.
He set that up and finished it himself. And I would like the one on Sunday in the Arsenal goal, we had like basically the goal in front of
And you're feeling on, you're feeling the way.
It's funny, my lad, who was in the main stand on Sunday, and he said the same things. And even after he'd gone past the goalkeeper, he said, I wasn't confident it was going to go in until I saw it roll into the net.
But to be fair, you know, you can't fault him because, like, if you think about it, we've won 2 or 3 games this season, and 2 out of 3 games, he's basically turned the game, hasn't he?
Yeah. That's what the other talks you've talked to.
And also, because the thing on Sunday, which you say it's about getting lucky, is You scored 30 straight after their goal. If they'd gone 5 or 10 minutes and everybody would have been leaving and booing, that would have been an absolute nightmare, wouldn't it? There's no way we're coming back from 2-2. But the fact that he got us back, I know with Luckman's balls, but he got us back into the game straight away. It was the time and the goal as much as the goal itself.
No, he turned the game by booting Aurelio Gomez in the head.
That
new goalkeeper didn't fancy it at all.
No.
I mean, Bainsey's corner was decent, but he was rooted to his line. Yeah. Gomez might have come and tried to challenge for that. And that was arguably the little bit of luck that we needed, you know, so maybe turn the season.
Phil, another player that was, I thought, was outstanding on Sunday was John Joe Kenny.
He's just sort of raging in the last 30 minutes. He just was like a man possessed, wasn't he? I felt for him in Lyon. I really did. In the second half, where he was forced onto the left-hand side, and he just wasn't comfortable. Yeah. That wasn't the John Joe that I've watched for 2.5 years, whatever, he's come through the 23s and obviously this season. But I think that reaction in the final 30 minutes was the Evertonian in him.
Do you see the stats as well for his performance at the weekend? I mean, passing wise, not great. I mean, Pickford actually had a more accurate, you know, pass completion rate. But defensively, which is what he's there for, more clearances, interceptions and tackles than any other player in the entire Premier League last weekend. You know, he got in the way of everything. That's what he's there for. And, you know, the corner from which we equalised from, it was his shot, you know, so on the rampage. Mm-hmm. And his reaction with the fans, you know, he was whipping the fans up. Yeah. That's an old head on young shoulders.
And I think we've got to keep faith with John Joe, and particularly look at how Seamus Coleman, you know, when he came through, he was making mistakes in big games and he was up and down in his form, but then it just clicks when you reach a certain level of maturity, doesn't it? And I think that, you know, everybody speaks incredibly highly of John Joe at the football club. There's clearly a very good right back in there and the potential to be, you know, a top flight right back in the future. It won't always be plain sailing as it wasn't in France. It's whether whoever comes in has that same faith in him. I hope they do.
It's interesting that he's the only outfielder to start all of Unsworth's four games, isn't he, Kenny? And I know, like, the sort of the options at right back maybe are a bit more limited to other, but he can play Holgate there, he can play Martina there. So it's interesting that obviously Unsworth sees something like you're saying there, Phil, that actually he has got something in him, but it might take a bit of time to come out. Give him as much game time as possible.
I remember vividly after the 23s last season when they played Chelsea, they could have won the league at Aldershot, and the chairman was down there and stuff, and they got held to a draw, and speaking to Unsworth after the game, and he made a point of saying that John Joe Kenny's performance was of Premier League standard in that game. So clearly he's been ready in Unsworth's eyes for a long time.
It's difficult, you know, sort of relying on young players. They've got to be introduced gradually and used, you know, fleetingly to get the best out of them. But exactly the same example with Ademola Lookman. He was the guy for me that changed the game more than anybody, because the club was so, or the side and the fans were so bereft of confidence that it needed something. And he injected that. He just picked up the ball and he started doing brave things. He started running at defenders. He started, you know, clipping ambitious passes forward. Just things that other players maybe weren't doing. And it really stood out for me. I thought it was a very, either a brave performance for a young kid or maybe one, the fearlessness of youth. But, you know, he made a massive impact. And, you know, I think we could see a little bit more of him in the future. Hopefully we do, because, you know, clearly he's a talent there.
He looks like he's rediscovered his mojo, doesn't he, a little bit, Ademola? Because he started off really encouraging him when we signed him in January, and then I'm convinced, I've not had the opportunity to ask him this, but I'm convinced the game at Middlesbrough was the point where he snowballed, where he missed a couple of really good chances. Koeman bombed him for the following game and he was in and out of the team and he just looked a different player for the worse. But you know, he's played for Unsworth in the 23s a little bit early in the season, and you suspect that we know the way we know Unsworth, he would have filled the lad with confidence, and I think we're starting to see it. I thought he was the best outfield player in Lyon, and I think he carried that on when he came off the bench on Sunday.
No, given obviously we've just talked about the youngsters there, is there a counter argument to say, and one fan told me on Sunday, he said this is the reason why I don't want Sam Allardyce as our manager, because he doesn't bring youngsters through, he doesn't play them. Now that could be a worry of mine, considering the crop of youngsters that we have got. And I wouldn't like to see in January Allardyce go with a couple of tried and trusted, and next minute your Davis aren't in the team, your Kennys aren't in the team, your Calvert-Lewins aren't in the team. And I just fear that could happen.
Long term, I totally agree with you. Long term, but this is the whole point. I personally
would. He'd have to play them from now till January, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and personally, I don't want Sam Allardyce as a long-term manager, but it's a case of whether it's needs must, isn't it? And whether actually Allardyce, if it's him, he goes, look, I appreciate that you've got young lads, but you've got to trust me. And maybe I can't play them every week, or they're going to have to come off the bench. And I know that's not what nobody wants to hear and nobody wants to see, but it's balancing act, isn't
it? I get that.
And I
totally, but that's not the fear, Phil, because
that's a long-term thing for me.
Because I can't see, if you're taking these kids out the equation in January, after them playing from now till Christmas,
yeah,
and then getting bombed.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to take some stomaching for them kids to come back.
I mean, I think John Joe would have to be wise enough to know that when Seamus Coleman's fit, he's back on the bench, isn't he? And whether Beningame and Tom, whether the club think they need another midfielder or whatever, I don't know.
Luckman, Calvert-Lewin.
I think Calvert-Lewin will play a part. You know, he didn't start him on Sunday, remember? Yeah, so, yeah. And you know, he didn't start in Lyon, so it's not like he's guaranteed a start. I think you have to play him or have him involved anyway. Luckman, I don't know. It's difficult, isn't it?
I would say that we have to take our new tinted spectacles off on this and say, what do we, in terms of, like we're saying, this transitional period, what I was saying before, maybe 3 or 4 years to get from A to B. Are you going to do that with a group of young players within that? And I don't think you're not. You may get one or two, but I don't see us moving forward in that time with Davis, Luckman, Calvert-Lewin, Kenny, Beningame, all in the team. That's just not going to happen. You might do if the other six players are Messi, Ronaldo, you know,
It happened at United in the early 90s.
But they were coming from a position of strength. They were, he's won two or three titles.
Yeah.
And like you see the players.
It's won the World Cup, haven't
they? But it's a massive difference. But, you know, the thing with United, then.
Just dismissing a World Cup win
there.
At under 17 level, when it comes to Premier League level, under 20, do dismiss it, you know, with all due respect. But United saying like 96, their senior players, Cantona, Keane,
Hughes,
Pallister, Schmeichel, top of the range players. We haven't got that, and when you have young players, Don Neville used to say when he was manager of Leeds, if you've got, you can have like 6 or 7 young players in the team, but make sure that the other four that you've got are all top players. If they're not, you'll get killed. And like, so that's the same with us, isn't it? Great if we have them 3 or 4 players in, but make sure the other 7 are all like top class. And I don't think we're even in that position yet. So I think we all want to see 4 or 5 graduates, we all get in the top four and back of them, but it's not going to happen.
I get that, but my fear is that you're not going to see any of them.
Well, but what would you rather do, finish 8th or 9th like that, or finish 6th with no young players in? What would you rather? I mean, that's... This Everton thing and all that, we've got to move away from that. And it'd be great to see it happen, and it may happen, but we shouldn't let our selection be first of all in. It's about the fact that we've got to have 2 or 3 academy graduates in the team. I just don't get that at all.
We actually, one of the pieces we got submitted to us this week by Rob Yates is his name, a guy who's, you know, railing against this managers that don't get Everton. He's not bothered. He says, results is the important thing. It doesn't really matter about any, you know, sort of romantic notions we might have. Well, we're going to wrap it up now. We've discussed the managerial options. We won't be back till this time next week, unless something happens in the meantime, and in which case, you know, so clearly we will to discuss it. But, you know, for the time being, thanks for joining us, and stick with us next time.